It is gone! A two-run home run for Rhys Hoskins into the second deck for Bryce Harper. Wait a miss, he got him! And Aaron Nola leads two. Segura on the run, reaches up and makes the grab!
Swing and a miss, struck him out!
Now batting for the Phillies, John Stolness.
Hey there, podcast pals, and welcome back to another edition of Hittin' Season. This is episode number 343, Emergency Podcast, Emergency Didi Gregorius Signing Podcast. The Phillies have been busy at the winter meetings. Man, this is a lot more fun than last offseason when the Phillies seemed to wait around forever to make moves, when really the whole baseball community waited around to make moves. And the Phillies have been busy at the winter meetings. They got Zach Wheeler earlier in the week, and on Tuesday, signed Didi Gregorius to a one-year deal. I'm going to talk about that coming up here in just a minute with Josh Diemert. He's a staff writer at Pinstripe Alley. I'm John Stolness, by the way, from The Good Fight. You can follow me on Twitter at John Stolness, but y'all probably knew that already. And so, yes, we're going to focus on the Didi Gregorius signing here and what that means for the Phillies and the rest of the offseason moving forward. Because, folks, it looks as though most of the heavy lifting, in fact, probably all of the heavy lifting for this team is now done. Everything done before Christmas. The Phillies have gone and gotten Didi Gregorius to sign a one-year, $14 million deal. Kind of a surprise that he wanted to go with a one-year deal only, but seems as though Gregorius recognized that taking a one-year deal here, he was going to go the Mike Moustakas route, try to build some value after a down season in 2019, and hopefully get back after with a full season under his belt, reestablish some value and hit the market again next offseason and try to get a multi-year deal that way. But for the Phillies, it's a no-brainer, and we'd been talking about this. This is the move that I had predicted. This is the move that lots of people had predicted. I didn't have any inside information on this. It just seemed like it made the most sense given what the Phillies already had with Scott Kingery and Gene Segura able to kind of move around the infield and shift to different positions. This allows the Phillies to get Gene Segura off of shortstop, where he was a bad defender last year. Gene Segura had been an adequate defender before 2019, but last year he really took a big step backwards, and this allows the Phillies to move him to second base, put Didi Gregorius at shortstop, where he is an above-average defensive player and also one of the better power-hitting shortstops in the game. The Phillies really needed another left-handed bat in the middle of the lineup, too, with Rhys Hoskins and JT Realmuto, the right-handed, and Scott Kingery, the right-handed bats. And really, all you had was Bryce Harper in the middle of that lineup with a lefty bat. Now you can add Gregorius to the mix, because, I mean, you also have Andrew McCutchen as a right-handed bat in there as well. And so this makes a lot of sense. It's... Listen, would you have liked to seen the Phillies go out and get Anthony Rendon or Josh Donaldson to play third base? Yeah, probably, but Gregorius, I mean, it's always more valuable to get yourself a quality all-star shortstop. The Phillies strengthen themselves up the middle defensively, which is always a good thing. You know, it appears as though they outbid the Milwaukee Brewers, or not, maybe not outbid, but according to Jim Salisbury of NBC Sports Philadelphia, Gregorius chose the Phillies over the Brewers and Giants. Apparently his connection with Joe Girardi as Phil's manager was a big reason for him signing here with the Phillies. And so, yes, the Phillies are pretty much done now this offseason. They've given $14 million to Didi Gregorius, and they signed Zach Wheeler to that five-year, $118 million deal, which looks a whole lot more sensible in hindsight after the seven-year, $245 million deal the Washington Nationals gave Steven Strasburg. My goodness, what a deal. So Zach Wheeler gets the five-year, $118 million. It looks almost sane when we were remarking how huge a contract that was for a guy like Zach Wheeler. Now, I'm not so sure that the Phillies, if the Phillies didn't pounce when they did, Zach Wheeler probably would have cost $30 million more. $140 million deal, $150 million deal even. So the Phillies have not made the announcement official as of Tuesday night when we're recording this, but they will. It just Gregorius has to pass a physical. So Gregorius coming to the Phillies puts them about $6 million short of the $208 million luxury tax threshold. And I think it's pretty clear that the Phillies this offseason, as the local guys have been saying, were not going to go over the luxury tax. They just weren't going to do it. I disagree with it. I know most of you listening disagree with it, but that's the way the Phillies are approaching this offseason. They went out and they got their number two starter, and they went out and got their infield help. And this was the Phillies needed to get another infielder after letting Cesar Hernandez and Michael Franco go. Look, folks, I like this move. I do. There's no such thing as a bad one-year deal. Didi Gregorius is a prime bounce-back candidate. He's been an excellent player with the Yankees over the years. He had to take over for Derek Jeter, an icon in New York. And he managed to do it. He managed to seamlessly take over for Derek Jeter as the New York Yankees shortstop, which is really an impossibility. It was an impossibility. There was no way that he should have been able to as seamlessly take over for Derek Jeter as he did. But the guy appears to have just a phenomenal personality. Everybody loves him. He's a locker room leader, which I think getting another voice in the Phillies locker room that can lead these guys. I mean, Didi Gregorius was the heartbeat of the New York Yankees, according to New York people. And we're going to talk to Josh Diemert about that here in just a second. But this seems like a no-brainer of a move because it not only helps you on the field, it also appears to help you in the locker room, which I still think is an area that's going to be in flux. With Gabe Kapler, the locker room ran itself. The inmates were running the asylum. With Joe Girardi there, it's going to be a little bit more of certainly it's going to be more organized, and there's going to be more of a boss in the room, and I think it certainly helps. Didi Gregorius can kind of help his teammates, I think, understand Joe Girardi's ways a little bit. You know, it certainly will help to have somebody, and it'll help Joe Girardi to know that he has somebody in the locker room that he's managed before. So it just makes all kinds of sense that Didi Gregorius, he'll only turn 30 in February, so this will be his age 30 season. He hit .277 with a .791 OPS and averaged 24 homers and 81 RBIs with the Yankees from 2016 to 2018. But last year, he only played half a season, coming back from Tommy John surgery. He hit only .238, but still had 16 home runs and 61 RBIs and 324 at-bats. But his defense suffered a little bit as he was working his way back from the Tommy John. And so, obviously, Gregorius is thinking, I'm going to rebuild my value. I'll do like what Mike Moustakas did, and then I'll go back on the free agent market next offseason and get my multi-year deal then. The Phillies can, of course, give him a qualifying offer and try and keep him that way next offseason. And if he decides to decline the qualifying offer, which one would assume he would do, then the Phillies would get a draft pick compensation if he decides to leave for someplace else. And so this makes a lot of sense on a whole lot of different levels. And you look at what he's replacing. He's replacing Michael Franco in the Phillies infield. Franco's last 342 plate appearances, he had .225 with a .278 on-base percentage. Now, I know Didi's track record. I mean, Jason Stark put this number out. If you compare each player's last 340 plate appearances, they've essentially been the same player. In 344 plate appearances last year, in 2019, Gregorius hit .238 with a .276 on-base percentage. Michael Franco, over the same number of plate appearances over the last couple years, .225 average, .278 on-base percentage. Very similar numbers. But the Phillies are obviously thinking that Didi Gregorius is going to bounce back from the Tommy John surgery. It just makes all the sense in the world that he would. And he's going to do great at Citizens Bank Park. He has 110 career home runs, Didi Gregorius does. Not a single home run has been hit to the opposite field in his career. He pulls everything. And he was a light-hitting shortstop when he first came up. When he got to the Yankees, he started his career with the Reds, made his big league debut with the Cincinnati Reds in 2012, and that's going to be my stat of the week, by the way, coming up in just a few minutes. But when Didi Gregorius first came into the league, he was not a home run guy. But he decided to focus on pulling the ball and elevating the baseball. And he's one of the guys for whom launch angle has worked. And he became a guy who was a perennial 20 to 25 home run hitter in New York from pulling the ball. Now Yankee Stadium is a phenomenal left-handed pull home run park. Citizens Bank Park, not far behind. Eighth best in Major League Baseball for lefties to pull home runs in 2019. Third best among National League parks. So this is going to be a very good move for Didi Gregorius coming to Philadelphia. One would think that he knew that coming into this, that his agent probably told him the analytics say this is probably a good place for you to come back and rebuild some value. So it's a win-win. A one-year deal for Didi Gregorius, who's going to give you good defense at shortstop. It's going to allow you to move Gene Segura from shortstop to second base, and it's going to allow you to put Scott Kingery at third base. Just makes a lot of sense for the Phillies to have him here. Jay Jaffe wrote a piece up for Fangraphs about the Didi Gregorius signing and noted that from 2016 to 2018, Gregorius hit 72 home runs, more than any other shortstop besides Manny Machado, Trevor Story, and Francisco Lindor. From 2016 to 2018, his 11.6 wins above replacement was seventh among shortstops. He had a career high in 2018 with 27 homers and a weighted runs created of 122, 4.7 wins above replacement. He can be an all-star shortstop. And in the National League, he does have some competition. There's a lot of good shortstops in the National League. You've got you've got Trevor Story. You've got Corey Seager. You've got Paul DeJong. There's a number of really good shortstops in the National League that I'm sure I'm forgetting, he may not be an all-star given how many good shortstops there are in the National League, but if he's a 4-5 win player, he probably will be. So, I mean, look, the other thing to think about with Didi Gregorius is the fact that, yes, he did have Tommy John surgery. Yes, the batting average and the on-base percentage were way down, but he was still hitting the ball hard last year. He was hitting the ball just as hard last year. If you look at his hard hit percentage, 34.8% of his batted balls were hard hit compared to 30.6% in 2018. So about a 4% jump. However, he swung at way more pitches out of the strike zone last year. 41% up from 36% the year before. And he made far less contact on pitches outside the zone than ever before. So he had a new, he set a, I mean, he doesn't strike out a ton, but he did set a career high in strikeout rate at 15.4%. And his walk rate dipped below 5%. So, I mean, listen, he's not the perfect player. He's not a perfect player, but I think he's probably going to be a 3 to 3.5 win player here in 2019, which I think is what you want from your shortstop here. Certainly it's going to be much better than what Gene Segura gave you. It's an upgrade from Michael Franco and Cesar Hernandez. It's a deal that just makes sense. It just makes sense for the Phillies. And so I'm on board with Didi Gregorius on a one-year $14 million deal. It could turn out to be an absolute steal of a deal. Well, up next, I'm going to talk to a staff writer at Pinstripe Alley, Josh Diemert, about Didi Gregorius, what he remembers from Didi's time in New York with the Yankees. We'll get his perspective up next right here on Hittin' Season. And joining me to talk a little bit about the Didi Gregorius signing is a guy who has watched Didi Gregorius play over the last few years while he was a member of the New York Yankees, Josh Diemert, who's a staff writer at the SB Nation Yankee site Pinstripe Alley. You can follow him on Twitter at Joshua Diemert. Josh, thanks for coming on Hittin' Season. How are you?
I'm doing good, John. How are you?
I'm doing good. I'm excited. You know, it's like, you know, the Phillies have this hole in the infield and we knew that they were going to be filling it. And I think when we entered the offseason, we figured the Phillies were going to be big on the third base market. But I think the asking price seems to be so high for guys like Anthony Rendon and for Josh Donaldson that Didi Gregorius makes a lot of sense, especially given the Phillies have a little bit of flexibility with Scott Kingery and Gene Segura. They can move those guys around. But because you're a staff writer for Pinstripe Alley, you've seen Didi play quite a bit. Tell me a little bit about your thoughts about Didi Gregorius. So what kind of player are we getting here?
Yeah, I mean, right off the top, it sucks to lose him. I mean, he came in 2015 with just an impossible job to try to replace Derek Jeter in New York. There was no way it could have ever ended well for him. And he did a brilliant job. He became a much better player than he was when he was traded from the Diamondbacks. He is sort of one of the poster boys for sort of modern analytical improvements that hitters can make, because he really became a different player when he was in the Bronx. And more than just on field, he's ridiculously fun. He is one of the best baseball Twitter accounts, baseball Instagram accounts to follow. He is an infectious energy on the field. I know guys love to play with him. Like Philly fans, regardless of how well he does on the field that you're going to fall in love with just watching him play, just because he's just so much fun. You know, and on top of all that, he's a really good player. He, you know, he had back-to-back, you know, 4.5 win seasons in 2017 and 2018, which, you know, from your shortstop, you'll take that every single year. And he, you know, has a lot of pop for a guy with his size. You know, some of it probably inflated by, you know, the juice ball and Yankee Stadium, but he's not moving to, you know, to a real hitter's park in Philadelphia. So I don't know how much of that is going to change. Yeah, he's a really good player. Obviously, this year he took a big hit on value because of the Tommy John surgery, and you know this is very much a rebuild year. Like we've seen a lot of players take, you know, these kind of 1 year deals to build up some value again. But for at least 1 year, I mean, I think Philly is lucky to have him.
Yeah, it sounds like Didi is kind of trying to follow the same path that Mike Moustakas did this year, where he had a big bounce-back season with the Brewers. It wasn't even really a bounce-back season. It didn't seem like teams really wanted to believe in him, but they certainly changed their tune this year. So Didi doing the same thing. Talk a little bit about the Tommy John surgery, though, because I know that you know he hurt himself at the end of 2018, and it's unusual for a position player to have to get Tommy John surgery. How badly did it affect him when he came back last year?
Yeah, I think it did affect, you know, the plate discipline dropped pretty consistently over what he had done in 2018. And that strikes me as a guy that is not comfortable with the plate. He's really pressing. And I wonder, you know, if there was a lack of confidence either after the surgery or from not having, you know, a full spring training and a full warm-up. His power numbers were still really good. You know, he had 16 home runs in 300-odd plate appearances, which obviously the ball was doing weird things this year, but is still pretty solid production from your shortstop, you know, in that number of plate appearances. So there is a lot of questions offensively about how much of his poor 2019, I think, was coming back from the injury. But and obviously that was a huge part in why he's only getting a one-year contract as opposed to, you know, a multi-year deal. But I mean, I still believe in him. His fielding metrics were still good this year. They were a little bit of a step back, but they were still solid. The power numbers are still there. So I think that with a full, you know, having had a full year off from the surgery and, you know, time to really ramp up to the season, I think that he'll be back to that 120-25 WRC plus hitter that he was.
Talk a little bit though about a little bit more about his kind of off the field persona, because you mentioned his Twitter feed, and it is a good one. I was looking at it a little bit earlier today, but you mentioned the fact that he had to take over for a legend, you know, one of those legendary Yankee figures in Derek Jeter. I mean, to be able to fill that role and to, you know, to kind of take over that clubhouse leadership, which I hear he's supposedly outstanding in the locker room. That, you know, what that means to a team that's trying to break through and get back to the postseason like the Phillies are.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, like I said, he came in with an impossible job to replace, you know, one of the greatest Yankees of all time, one of the most famous, you know, arguably other than, you know, Babe Ruth or something like that, the most famous baseball player of all time. So did it by being on the field, but being sort of the opposite of Derek Jeter in that he was always smiling. He was always happy. He really embraced, you know, the social media tools that a lot of fans are using to keep in touch with their favorite players. You know, I didn't just see Didi during the games. I saw him on Twitter. He was doing live streams. Even, you know, he does the emojis for post-game victories. I've kept track all 4 years. Every single player on the Yankees has a different emoji, and then when they have a good game, they get a shout out on Twitter. Or in the playoffs this year, he actually hand-drew illustrations of every single Yankee, and then when they had a big game in the playoffs, he would post that, you know, hand-drawn illustration of, you know, of the player on Instagram. And just that kind of change in personality is such a positive thing for baseball, especially, you know, with teams that can sometimes be a little bit stuffy like the Yankees. You know, I don't know what the Phillies are like as an organization, but, you know, again, as sort of an older and more established franchise, I think it's really valuable to have guys like Didi. I mean, the Phillies did it with Harper too, getting that kind of personality that can really be an exciting flashbulb. However well the team does, you still want that kind of attractive marquee kind of content. So yeah, he's just so I get like giggling when I talk about him, because he is just so infectious. He's so great to cheer for as a fan. And then in the locker room, I mean, he's an international guy. He was born in the Netherlands. He was raised in the Caribbean. He speaks like four or five different languages. And one of the things that has been a constant his time in New York is baseball does have a real issue, I think, of bridging a divide between, you know, American players and Latin players, especially when these players are now so young and being asked to do so much. And Didi has been, you know, a really, really great way to bridge that gap with the Yankees, you know, as they have, you know, young American players like Aaron Judge, and then they have their young Latin talent, you know, like Gleyber Torres or Luis Severino. Didi has been a really great way because he's so multicultural. He has such a diverse sort of lived experience that he's really been able to sort of be a uniting front on a locker room that can be pretty diverse.
You know, I think that it's going to be interesting to see how the Phillies move forward with Joe Girardi as manager now. And I think that was one of the big reasons why Didi Gregorius signed with the Phillies over some other teams was that Joe Girardi is the Phillies manager. Although I are you surprised that there wasn't at least one team out there that was willing to sign him to a multi-year deal? Or do you think this was more a decision on his part to go ahead and just do the 1 year, reestablish the value and go out on the market next off season? Cause I'm surprised that any player would turn down a multi-year deal.
Yeah. I tend to think that I agree with you. I mean, we saw last year, Yaz Grandal did it. Would he have 2 years offered for him last year? And he ended up going with the 1 year deal. Donaldson took a 1 year deal last year. Moustakas did the same thing. So I do think that it was probably a conscious choice on Didi's part, to take a 1 year deal, but I'm not sure what was offered out there for him. I mean, he's getting a little bit older. He is a shortstop and coming off the Tommy John surgery. Yeah, I'm not sure what the thought process was. I do think that Joe Girardi definitely, I mean, it sounded like the Brewers were also particularly interested in Didi, and sounded like, you know, the presence of Joe Girardi. I don't know if it was a tiebreaker, because I don't know what the Brewers offered in terms of money, but seemed to be, you know, a big value add for Didi was having Girardi there. You know, obviously a guy that was pretty, you know, pretty prominent in Didi becoming such a great ball player was having Girardi as his manager. So it's nice to see them get reunited for sure.
I think one of the things that's going to be interesting, and I'm looking at some of the numbers you mentioned, I was looking at his spray chart. He's never hit an opposite field home run in his entire career. And, you know, 92% of his home runs hit to the pull side. Citizens Bank Park allowed the eighth most home runs from left-handers to the pull side in 2019, which is third most in NL Park. So that would seem to portend good things for Didi Gregorius here moving forward with the Phillies. I just kind of wanted to get your thoughts on kind of where you thought he stood now among National League shortstops. I'm going through the list right now of National League shortstops last year, and I know he was an all-star in the American League for a number of years, but you've got Trevor Story, you've got Javier Baez, you've got Paul DeJong, Trey Turner, Corey Seager. I mean, that's a good list of shortstops right there. Ahmed Rosario might be ready to take another step forward. Nick Ahmed's a good shortstop. I mean, that's a good amount of quality shortstop. And then you've got the kid from Pittsburgh, Kevin Newman, who hit .308 last year as a rookie. So, you know, it's a tough group to crack into there. Where do you think Didi Gregorius falls among some of those guys? Story, Baez, DeJong, Turner, Seager.
For sure. Yeah. I mean, Didi's always kind of been just outside that top tier shortstop. When he was in the AL, you know, he was just a hair behind kind of the bigger guys. Definitely, you know, he is behind Story. He's definitely behind Baez. I think that he's sort of comfortably, you know, a four-ish win player if he's healthy and if he can keep the power to the pull side. I think it works for him. And, you know, the defense, we'll see what happens. It has declined a little bit the last couple of years. But, you know, he's not old by any stretch. So, you know, we're looking at about a four-win player, which is sort of that same, you know, he's not going to be the best shortstop in the National League by any stretch. But he's going to be, you know, comfortably and certainly an asset, I think, for the Phillies. And, you know, there's potential upside. He never quite got to that five-win level. I just don't think he's that good of a hitter. Yeah. In with the Yankees, but you know, a solid 3.5 to 4 win player. I mean, I'm just on Fangraphs right now, and you know, that's what Trey Turner was last year, and I think at $14 million, that's a pretty good buy for the Phillies.
That's a great buy for the Phillies, and I've said it before, there's no such thing as a bad one-year deal, and $14 million, certainly when the Phillies could have spent 7 years and, you know, Trevor, get Nolan Arenado money Anthony Rendon, if the Phillies had gone after Anthony Rendon, I'm not going to complain about that at all, but, you know, Didi Gregorius makes a lot of sense on a lot of levels. I did want to talk to you about some other Yankee stuff, because obviously they are at the center of the winter meetings right now, and by the time people listen to this podcast, the Yankees may have already gotten Gerrit Cole. But what's your confidence level on the Yankees signing Gerrit Cole? What kind of contract do you think Brian Cashman is going to offer up to this guy?
Yeah, I have no idea. I'm definitely... I am among, I think, the more cynical people in sort of Yankees discourse on Gerrit Cole, because I've seen this happen with the Yankees where they do not want, they're fine with signing free agent deals. It seems to be extended terms that really scare them. So they were never a player on Scherzer. They're never a player on Darvish. They're never a player on Greinke. Their offer to Corbin was beaten specifically because Corbin wanted to go more than 5 years and the Yankees wouldn't. You know, the last time they signed a guy to a contract more than 5 years was Masahiro Tanaka, and they did that 6 years ago. Yeah. When Strasburg got 7 years, which was a shock to me, and I think a shock to most people that he got that much, that much term. Obviously, Cole is going to get at least eight. He'll probably, I think it's not unlikely that he's going to get nine. I don't know if the Yankees are going to go to that term. I think that there was, the figure that I heard this afternoon was 8 and 294, which, all things considered, I think that's probably a pretty fair offer for yeah. Gerrit Cole. But, if the Angels, now we're hearing that I don't necessarily think that the Astros are all that serious in their pursuit, but, the Giants could make a play. Apparently they're the second mystery team or whatever Scott Boras is talking about now. If one of those teams goes to 9 years, I have a hard time imagining Brian Cashman would want to meet that, just because he just has not done that. He's refused to go to contracts that are that long.
I can't blame him. I can't blame him for a 9-year deal, as good as Gerrit Cole is. I mean, here's the thing. Gerrit Cole has been a good pitcher. Last year was his first elite season,
sure.
Right?
Yeah.
So that's a risk. It's a huge risk to go 9 years on a guy who certainly does look as good as Gerrit Cole did last year. Maybe he's about to go on a Scherzer-like run, but mm-hmm. My goodness, that's a big risk.
Yeah, I mean, the counterpoint that I would offer is, what is the point of having Aaron Judge and Gary Sanchez and Luis Severino and DJ LeMahieu and Gleyber Torres and this core that the Yankees have built up?
Yeah.
You don't want to look back at this core 10 years from now and say, man, how did they not win? And yes, they went to the ALCS two years ago. Yes, they went to the ALCS this year. Yes, I understand that they have had playoff success, but you do not want this team to be, the Braves of the 90s, where right. You look back at the talent that those Braves teams had, or even the Dodgers of this decade. The Dodgers have won 7 division titles. They've been successful, but we're all looking at the Dodgers like, geez, these guys are kind of a letdown. And, I don't want the Yankees to do that. I think the best way to avoid that, Gerrit Cole doesn't guarantee anything, of course, but the best way to boost your chances is just give the guy his money and worry about, might he be a problem in 2028? Yeah, he might be, but worry about that in 2028. We might all be fish food. Who cares?
Are you surprised that the Yankees didn't at least offer Didi Gregorius a qualifying offer?
Well, I'm not surprised that they didn't offer him a QO, because obviously we saw that he signed for less than the QO. So I think that, I was actually just talking about this with my editor this afternoon. The market for 1-year contracts is pretty efficient. Like, that capital gets allocated really efficiently. If teams don't think that he's worth, that a player is worth, $17 million, he's probably not. But I was surprised that it didn't feel like the Yankees reached out to him at all. And they are negotiating with Brett Gardner, who's considerably older. And, Gardner's probably going to come back on a 1-year deal. I know that there has been interest in bringing Dellin Betanzas back. It never felt like anything with Gregorius got off the ground. Like, the Yankees said, thank you for everything, but we're done here. So I'm surprised there wasn't a little bit more of a buzz. But, it's the decision that they made. And I guess now Gleyber Torres is the Yankees starting shortstop.
And I guess, you know, for that, what the Yankees have decided to do is the Phillies gain here, because it certainly looks like they got themselves a good shortstop, and of course hoping for a bounce back season. Well, folks, make sure that you're reading Josh Diemert's stuff in Pinstripe Alley, as the Yankees really are the center of the universe right now and at the winter meetings in San Diego. And make sure you follow him on Twitter at Joshua Diemert. Josh, thanks so much for coming on Hitting Season. I appreciate it.
Thanks for having me, John.
Well, before we wrap up, let's just take a look now at what this means for the rest of the Phillies offseason. So like I mentioned just a minute ago, I think the Phillies are pretty much done. They are pretty much done adding big-name players. They're not going to be involved in either of the third basemen that are out there. They're not going to trade for Chris Bryant, it doesn't seem like. It sounds like if they add another starting pitcher, it's going to have to be somebody that's only going to cost $4 or $5 million, one would imagine. Now, maybe they swing a trade for a starting pitcher, but if it's a really good starting pitcher that's making a lot of money, I don't know how you get it in under the luxury tax. So unless the Phillies are able to go out and get somebody like Tanner Roark for $4 or $5 million, and I don't think you can even get him for that kind of money, or Wade Miley for that kind of money, I don't know what starting pitcher you can go out there and get for $6 million or less, because they still have to probably get a bench guy, another bench player. You would think that they would add maybe at least one person, one relief pitcher, but maybe they're only looking in the bargain bin for relief pitchers, getting a guy who's going to cost you $1 million, $1.5 million or something like that. But maybe they go out and they try to sign a starting pitcher who you're trying to get as a reclamation project. But you're probably at this point looking at two of Vince Velasquez, Nick Pivetta, or Zach Eflin making the starting rotation next year. I'm sorry to say that, but you're probably looking at two of those three guys making the rotation instead of one of those three guys, unless they swing a deal that is unforeseen, because, folks, they're not going over the luxury tax. They will only go over the tax, and this is what John Middleton said at the beginning of the offseason. This team will go over the luxury tax if it's a move that puts them over the top to get to the World Series. But there's no way to make that move right now. There's no one you could go out and get really right now. I mean, you could argue getting Garrett Cole would put the Phillies over the top. But he's probably going to get, like you heard Josh say, an 8 or even a 9-year deal at over $300 million. Would I do it? Yeah, I would. But I don't think John Middleton's going to do it. And I think there's really only one or two teams that want to do it, and that's the Yankees and the California teams, the Angels, and probably not the Dodgers. I can't imagine the Dodgers going that high. But if the Phillies are going to get another big name, it probably won't happen until the trade deadline, when you kind of know where you stand as a team. Have some of your players bounced back? Has Rhys Hoskins bounced back? Has Scott Kingery moved on and had a better season than he had last year? Did Andrew McCutchen recover from his knee surgery? Did Gene Segura become the 300 hitter that we thought we were getting last year? Did JT Realmuto continue to perform the way he has? And by the way, JT Realmuto is not going to sign that contract extension this offseason. That's probably going to come in season next year. Is Aaron Nola going to be a slightly better version than the one we saw this year? Is Zach Wheeler going to be good? You know, there's so many, and what are you going to get out of the bullpen? There are so many unanswered questions that the Phillies have coming into 2020. They've got a lot of star power. They've got a lot of big names on this team. And I think John Middleton will go over the tax if during the course of the season next year he sees that the team is worth investing in. But there's no way to know that now. And so the Phillies are going to stay under that luxury tax right now. They're not going to go over it. I can't imagine. I have a very hard time imagining a scenario this offseason where they go in and they add somebody. Maybe late in the offseason, if February or March rolls around and Anthony Rendon is still hanging on the vine, or Josh Donaldson is still hanging on the vine, maybe they pull the trigger. Maybe they pull the trigger. But I doubt it. I really don't see it happening. And so you're going to have Scott Kingery opening the season probably at third base. You'll have Gene Segura opening the season at second base. Again, I would love to see Kingery at second base full time, but I don't think you can put Segura at third. But they might try that. I think they're going to try it out in spring training and see what they get. It's going to be one of those two options, but those two guys are your second and third baseman. You have Reese at first, Didi at shortstop, and then you're going to have Andrew McCutchen. You're probably going to have Adam Haseley playing center field most of the time, and you're going to have Bryce Harper in right field, JT Realmuto behind the dish. You're going to have Aaron Nola and Zach Wheeler as your top two starters. You're going to have Zach Eflin in the rotation, and then you're probably going to have either Vince Velasquez or Nick Pivetta in one of the rotation spots, and Jake Arrieta as your other starting pitcher in that starting five. Does that, and that doesn't give me a ton of confidence in the rotation, but it is what it is. They're just not going to go after and pay the kind of money for Gerrit Cole that he's going to demand here. So it looks like the Phillies heavy lifting is done. It does give the Phillies the flexibility to bring up Alec Bohm at some point in the 2020 season. That was the other factor playing into all this. If you sign Anthony Rendon or Josh Donaldson to a long deal, you pretty much have to trade Alec Bohm or Rhys Hoskins. One of those two guys has to go. Now Alec Bohm can comfortably start the season in AAA. He can get a half a season of reps under his belt at third base, a half a season of hitting with the AAA ball, which is similar to the big league baseball. And Major League Baseball has said that they actually are going to hold a news conference, I think on Wednesday, about the state of the baseballs. It'll be interesting to see what happens there, see how he does in AAA. If they want to bring him up, they can bring him up, and they can move Scott Kingery and platoon him in center field with Adam Haseley. Make him a super utility guy again and put Alec Bohm at third base and play him 4 or 5 days a week. They can do that now with Didi Gregorius only here on a one-year deal. That was part of the appeal of Gregorius for the Phillies, is that he only wanted a one-year deal, and it gave them the flexibility of keeping Alec Bohm in their long-term plans. Now, they might still decide to trade Alec Bohm for a starting pitcher. I don't think so. But this also gives the Phillies some flexibility with Spencer Howard, too, and it'll be interesting to see how the Phillies start his 2020 season. He didn't pitch many innings last year. If the Phillies want him to be a part of the big league rotation in some capacity in 2020, they're going to have to delay the start of his season or minimize his innings early on so that they can get some use out of him later on in the season. So the Phillies offseason, the hot stove for the Phillies is pretty much done. Look for them to be adding some bargain basement guys along the way. Look for them to add a lower tier starting pitcher. I think it's going to have to be an even lower tier than Tehran or Miley or Roark or even Porcello. I'd be surprised. Maybe you get Porcello on a $3 or $4 million deal, but even him, I think you're going to have to pay more than that to get him. So I just don't know what else they can do here in this free agent market and stay under the luxury tax. Am I convinced that they've closed the gap on the Nationals and the Braves given the additions they've made? I'm not. I think in order to close the gap on the Braves and the Nationals, they need to go over the tax. I think they should go over the tax. I think they should go over the tax and supplement themselves with Hyunjin Ryu as a guy I would love to see them go over the tax and go get. I think that would help this team out tremendously, and I think they should go over the tax to get one or two reliable bullpen pieces in order to really help close the gap on the Nationals and the Braves, because I still think this is the third best team in the National League East. The Braves and Nationals are really good. The Phillies don't have the young impact talent that those teams have, and so I like the signing of Gregorius. I get why they did it. I think they need to do more. I think they need to go over that tax because, as you heard me explain it on the last podcast, the luxury tax really doesn't mean all that much. It really doesn't. It's a 20% overage. If you stay $20 million under, I mean, if you only go no more than $20 million over the tax, you pay a 20% tax on the overage. That's it. The Phillies would be an extra $4 million or something like that. So if the Phillies really want to close the gap, there's still some work to be done. But I don't think they're going to go over the tax, which means most of the heavy lifting, if not all of the heavy lifting for this offseason, has come to a close on the Tuesday of the winter meetings, which is such a far different scenario than we saw last year. All right, folks, it's time for your stat of the week here, and this comes courtesy of Sarah Langs of ESPN. Didi Gregorius made his major league debut on September 5th, 2012, for the Cincinnati Reds against the Philadelphia Phillies, his new team. Check out the lineups that day. For the Phillies, Jimmy Rollins was the leadoff guy, followed by Juan Pierre, Chase Utley, Ryan Howard, John Mayberry batting fifth, Dominic Brown batting sixth, Eric Kratz batting seventh, Michael Martinez as your third baseman batting eighth, and Roy Halladay was on the mound for the Phillies that day, pitching and batting ninth. For the Reds, you had Brandon Phillips in the leadoff spot, followed by Chris Heisey in center field, Joey Votto, Ryan Ludwig, Jay Bruce in right field, Todd Frazier, Deonor Navarro at catcher, and Didi Gregorius was the eight-hole hitter, hitting in front of Mike Leake that day for the Cincinnati Reds. And folks, that'll do it for this edition of Hittin' Season. My thanks to Josh Diemert for coming on the podcast. And just a reminder, folks, to head on over to the Hittin' Season Patreon. Check out all of the great new content we have there. It's at patreon.com/hittin'season. And make sure to tell your friends about the Good Fight podcast feed. Go to Apple Podcasts, leave a rating, subscribe, and review the podcast, and download us whether you're on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, and wherever it is you get your podcasts. Thanks, everybody, for tuning in. I'll talk to you next time here on Hittin' Season.